This is the real weepy and like tragic part of the story beginning, oh my brothers and only friends.
I'm in for four potential getaway drivers. Go.
No!
But I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
No!
Excuse me, we have a little bit of a hurry.
Hang on, Voltaire.
It's yet another long series of diversions in an attempt to avoid responsibility.
Hello! Welcome to another edition of This Just In, where we here deliver you the best witty banter, mindless soul speak, and life-jeopardizing repartee. Today on This Just In, we have part two of a possible three-part series in our piss-poor mixtape, our shoddy attempt at bringing you the worst of music via the timeless art form of mixtape creation. Last week, if you recall, I brought forth my minions of shit music to combat Tanner, and this week he gets the chance to respond. Allow me first to introduce us both. I'm Chris View, co-editor of The Means, podcasting from Detroit.
And I'm Tanner Higgin, co-editor of The Means, podcasting from Los Angeles.
And I think we're ready to go with the flow here. Tanner, tell me first, what was your methodology in creating a formidable opponent to my opening volley last week?
Well, I started off originally having a grand concept where I was going to go through all decades and pick out the crappiest select tunes from each decade. But I was doing that, I was quickly realizing that some decades were just plain worse than the others. And that I had an immense amount of songs in some decades and then none in others. So I had to throw that out, and I just went for the most scientific selection possible. I tried to go with songs that were just piss poor all around, in lyrics, in music, in melody, in subject matter, in transitions, everything possible had to be considered. And I ended up having, for a lot of songs, I ended up breaking down into genres and having multiple selections for each, and then eliminating certain songs on, well, this one has a catchy hook that's all right, or this one has this, and just ending up with one song in each sort of genre category that just sucked at everything. So I think I've got a strong list of songs that have no redeeming value whatsoever, and kind of each give a little different taste of music, so...
All the audience, too, that I still have no idea what he's chosen, and we've been in correspondence several times over the course of this week since our last podcast, and everything is just as fresh to me as it will be to the listeners, and definitely your technique differs from mine. Mine didn't span, you know, I didn't do it by decade, or like you said, you tried to do at least. I don't know how well mine went over, considering you've got the upper hand when you get to hear what I have to say first, and now you get to choose yours based on what I did. So definitely I'm in for a treat. I think every one of our listeners is as well, though.
Yeah, plus I had an extra amount of time. And I also would like to mention that during this podcast, hopefully I'll be able to play the music and we'll be able to talk over it at the same time. So if something particularly crappy comes up, we'll be able to bring it to your attention. So if you hear our voices, that's not lag. That's probably us just talking over the music. All right. I wrote an intro for each of these songs to sort of give you a background as to my choice. So I'll go in the intro, then I'll play our selection, and we can...
Are you going to do it in radio voice?
I don't think I've got a radio voice.
You might as well try it out.
Okay. Okay, the first one. The 90s were a decade of musical reinvention. After the 80s, the 90s got together and had to brainstorm. They knew they had just been through the most amazing decade of music ever and had to do something. A few bands got it right, like Radiohead. But oh, so many bands got it wrong. Thanks to bands like Fastball, Smash Mouth, and 7 Mary 3, I spent a vast majority of my teenage years filled with angst, forced to listen to heavy metal to prevent a life of violence and crime, provoked by the saturation of terrible bands offering up songs that continually got worse and worse. While I surveyed a host of 90s songs that typified the uninspired and directionless offerings of pop rock during the decade, one song seemed to embody everything I hate. Pointless lyrics, boring as hell music, and twangy vocals. Prepare yourself for Marcy Playground's brain melting shit pile, Sex and Candy.
No! Oh, God.
the nice boring ass beginning. I think what I really hate about this song is the lyrics, so try to pay attention to them.
Okay.
Black Disco Superfly. That's a perfect example. Disco
yeah.
Superfly.
I smell sex and can do
who's yum, yum, yum. Who's yum, yum, yum. Yum, yum, yum.
Mama, this Charlie is a dream. Yeah. Yeah, mama, this Charlie is a dream.
It just, it makes you want to go to sleep.
Yeah.
All right, that's enough of that one.
Okay, as soon as you were saying that, I remember that very, very vividly, and I remember the video for it. Do you remember that? The guy's head is sitting, like, he's out of a, I don't know what it was, his head was just his head, and the spider's crawling around him. And then you see him looking at the spider while he's singing these pointless lyrics. I definitely remember that song, and it typifies, because those were about our high school years, mm-hmm. and it typifies everything that I hated about it, because there's, like you said, there's pointless lyrics to the song, and it's like this low droning, there's nothing to it. I don't know what record company sat there and said, yes, that's it. That's, you know, that's the best thing ever. How did they come up with that?
Yeah, for some reason, the 90s, during that one little period, that had a lot of just this boring, droning, just moseying along music that really meant nothing and was accomplishing nothing. It's just frustrating to listen to.
That song reminds me, there's another song from the 90s that is very typical of the 90s, which was that Closing Time.
Yeah.
You know, that song, like, all those songs are that, they all piss me off. And you said Fastball, and Fastball immediately brought forth all these memories of, probably the worst period of my life. I don't know, it's probably the dark ages of my life. And you can definitely see there was a struggle within the music industry, and they didn't quite know where to go, so they were just searching for shit, just searching. And they couldn't find anything that would stick, obviously, because I don't know what happened to that band.
Yeah, and nothing could be worse than being a teenager during the 90s and then having depressing, horrible music to be the soundtrack of your life, you know.
What does Sex and Candy mean? I mean, what does it mean?
I don't really know. It's just about him staring at somebody and somebody deviously staring back at him, and it's just retarded.
All right, that song's definitely a good song. I don't know if it compares to Jordy, but I'll give you that it's definitely one of the shittiest songs. It deserves to be on a mixtape of shit songs. So.
All right, let's see if I can kick it up another notch here with this next horrible offering. All right, Radio Voice on. The following song was the only one that was never in doubt as to its status and place on this list. I was probably 4 or 5 when I first remember hearing it, sitting in the back of my mom's car, driving to the grocery store or school or some other place. My mom always listened to oldies, often the songs were tolerable, and often they were good. One song, however, sent my 4-year-old psyche into a blood-boiling rage that to this day still lingers when I hear this song. It spent 5 weeks as number one on the Billboard charts and went on to become the best-selling song of 1963, a feat that is unimaginable for a song you'd hear sung by animatronic puppets at Chuck E. Cheese. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Sugar Shack by Jimmy Gilmore and the Fireballs.
Oh, there's a crazy little shack beyond the tracks. Everybody calls it the Sugar Shack. Well, it's just a coffee house and it's made out of wood. Espresso coffee tastes.
I'm slitting my wrists.
I know. It's so bad. That little beeping is just, oh, it gets me enraged.
There's this cute little girlie, she's a working there.
Oh, take it down, Jimmy.
I'm gonna drink a
cash. Make that girl love me when I
bridge it out
some trash. You can understand.
But we know it's coming and we don't want it.
Get to that sugar shack.
All right, I think it's obvious why I chose that song.
What a song! You know, that song is only rivaled by Roy Orbison's Penny Arcade. That's the only song I could. Wow. Let me tell you something right off the bat. I know that song very well, but I don't know how I know that song.
Yeah,
I think that's. It's like it was embedded in some far, like the farthest reaches of my brain. It's like when you're like molested as a child.
Yeah.
That's one of those songs that's repressed for me.
It represents, like, that late 50s, early 60s mentality where everything's squeaky clean, you know, and it's all family values and morality. And that's the type of music that came out of that garbage where there's, like, no expression other than to talk about some sugar shack that serves coffee, which I guess is probably, you know, in some way related to drugs or whatever that whole movement was, that they're, you know, the psychedelic mm-hmm. thing. It's like a precursor to the psychedelic songs, but, oh, it's just so...
It's interesting. When you bring that up, though, you're saying about psychedelic drugs and how it's probably a euphemism for some sort of a den of iniquity.
Mm-hmm.
When you bring that up, I'm reminded of an Iggy Pop interview where he actually said how there was all these songs coming out in the early 60s that had nothing to do... Like, they had this presentation like they were about family values. They were about... You know, the sugar-coated, you know, 60s. But he talks about how it wasn't, how he was actually speaking about it. And that's the exact... That epitomizes exactly what he was talking about. These bands who had something to say, but they opted for going the easiest route. They didn't do it as grimy as Iggy Pop did. And that song right there is so... It's so... Oh my god, it's a ridiculous song. Who cares about the Sugar Shack? I don't even know what a Sugar Shack is, let alone with that synth like bleep 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 bleep. I don't get it. It doesn't do anything for me.
Any song that could be equally enjoyed by children and adults is just bad news.
Exactly. Wow, I can't believe you dug that up, by the way, because you know, when I was searching for my stuff, I didn't really consider much from the eras of the 50s, 60s. And I guess, you know, that's something to be said, because when people look back on oldies, they do look back on it with a very nostalgic look. And when you look through nostalgia's eyes, you definitely see things with... people think that there's some sort of clarification to it. They see it, you know, they don't see it for what it was. And when you hear songs like that, it reminds you, you know what? Shit existed back then.
Yeah.
Go ahead with the next song.
All right.
I'm ready.
Many would argue country music is the worst genre of all time. I would beg to differ. Any single cult hit song would easily best any country song in a brawl for it all. But what do I mean by cult hits? I mean those terrible plague-like songs that infect every simpleton's brain and fashion them into a slave of bottom-of-the-barrel pop culture. Once the plague passes, the simpletons then disavow all knowledge of their previous super fandom and await the next cult hit. Songs such as the Macarena, Mambo No. 5, and Who Let the Dogs Out would have been at home on this list, representing the cult hit category. But I wanted to do it one better. There is one man who has somehow brainwashed simpletons for decades now into listening to his cult garbage, and even buying merchandise to advertise their stupidity. That man is Jimmy Buffett, and this song is called Cheeseburger in Paradise.
Oh!
His voice, oh, his voice.
The demographic this appeals to, I just don't relate.
Oh, no way. You have to be like a craft sweater wearing QVC watching mom or a middle aged like identity crisis male.
Yeah.
Okay, get ready for the worst part.
Hand clap.
That's all I can take.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm glad you brought that song up, because it's been a long time coming that it needs to be recognized as one of the worst songs of all time. It's really appalling to me when I go to, for instance, there's a key club, a piano bar in Pontiac just nearby here, and they play that song like it's like the god of all songs, and people are loving it. They're throwing money into a hat. This guy's sitting there pianoing it up. He's just playing the song, and I'm the only one sitting there saying, "What are you guys, idiots? Like, how can you sit there and listen to this garbage?"
It's like a nursery rhyme. It's about a cheeseburger and people eating it. Doesn't music have more to offer to people who like Jimmy Buffett?
Well, let's compare. Let's do a quick comparison, because you hear songs like Sounds of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel, okay? It's songs that are deep. They strike an emotional chord with you, okay? Then there's Cheeseburger in Paradise, and just saying the name of the song is enough to make me say to myself, you know what, if we were going to compare these songs, no. Any of you parrot heads out there, I'm sorry. I'm sorry if you're a parrot head and you love Jimmy Buffett, but get out of my face. You don't understand good music. You like frivolous BS is what it comes down to. And that's fine. You can have a guilty pleasure all you want. But if you actually like Jimmy Buffett, there's definitely a little... There's something off about you. I'd have to say there's something off.
I mean, if... The weirdest thing is people form entire lifestyles based around that parrot head thing. It's like, I'm going to wear Hawaiian shirts, sit around and eat cheeseburgers and drink margarita. If that is how you identify yourself and want to live your life, I don't quite understand why you're still living, because you... what exactly is being accomplished?
There's nothing being accomplished by someone who... Because part of my criteria for a shit song is the lyrical value has to have... You have to have some weight with your lyrics. And when you hear that, like the breakdown to that song, you know, where it's like hand claps, like... It's about lettuce and tomatoes and putting your fixins on a burger. It's like, what?
Yeah, it's...
No!
It's
a viable song.
It can't be separated from that, what is it, the Whopper song or the Big Mac song?
It's the Big Mac song. I don't know how it goes, but it's about lettuce and tomatoes and...
Yeah, two sesame seed buns, but...
Yeah.
It's the same thing. They're basically listening to a McDonald's advertisement.
That song is bullshit, I agree with you. Next song, though. Next song.
Okay. Somehow, people have been convinced that my next band is actually good and respectable. How this happened, I'm not quite sure, as they are blatantly devoid of any semblance of creativity, relevance, or musical ability. Each song they released was composed of dirty, muddled guitar work and inane lyrics. They represent the catchy, but ultimately soulless and forgettable music that dominated the airwaves during the 90s, and that has now faded to obscurity and irrelevance, or at least one would hope. This band is Stone Temple Pilots, and the song is Vaseline. If you think this song is smart or intelligent, kill yourself. So we're flies in the Vaseline. Oh, that is such an intelligent statement. Oh yeah, rock me, rock me. Yeah, dirty it up again, dirty it up again. Oh, bongos. Talk about skill. Okay, that's enough.
All right. Well, it's interesting you bring up Stone Temple Pilots, because the most obscure yet... what's the word for it? They have no meaning to their lyrics. I think of all bands of the 90s and even the Double Ox, they have no they have nothing to say, and yet they have they have these songs that are hits. That whole CD, I don't remember the name of it, but I remember there was a baby riding some sort of a Valkyrie or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But I remember I listened to that CD, and the only reason why I bought that CD is I believe that there was a song from The Crow. What was that song that was on there? There was a song from The Crow soundtrack, anyway. Big Empty. And I remember buying that CD, and I was thinking to myself, you know, I was young at the time, and I'm thinking, like, these lyrics don't appeal to me. I don't know what it is about this song that I like. And then I realized, you know what? I don't like it. And so I immediately put the CD on the shelf, and to this day, I have yet to listen to a song from that CD.
Yeah, I think my main reason with going with this is the fact that there's a lot of music out there, like Stone Temple Pilots, that people somehow got tricked into thinking was actually good. I don't know how Stone Temple Pilots got a good rap during the 90s, but they did. But if you really listen to the music, it is so empty. And, like I said, soulless. It doesn't have any soul to it. It doesn't have any, like, power to it.
Right.
That I think people all along have just been kind of listening to it and not really thinking about it and going, wow, this music really does suck.
Mm-hmm. And I think that reflects even in the new band that Scott Weiland has right now. What is that again? With Slash?
Yeah,
I don't even remember. They're so forgettable. But it's honestly really bad music. And you can see, I wonder, there was with Stone Temple Pilots, there were Scott Weiland and two brothers. And the two brothers, one was the bass, one was the guitarist. And you could hear, even in their music, because it's like, I imagine those two brothers being like, you know what, we're good musicians. And then we've got Scott Weiland, who's all about drugs and all about shooting up heroin. And we're being fucked by this dude who's going to ruin himself. And, like, those guys were decent. You know, I hear that song and I say to myself, yeah, it's simple. But at the same time, as a guitarist, those guys aren't that bad. They did a decent job with music. But then you hear Scott Weiland's lyrics and you're like, what the hell was that guy thinking, right? You know. I don't identify with that music at all.
See, maybe you're on to something. It's because his new band's called Velvet Revolver. I just looked it up.
Okay, yeah.
And, I mean, everyone can acknowledge that Slash is pretty awesome. That Guns N' Roses had some pretty amazing riffs and songs and all that. But once they got, because basically the whole band is Guns N' Roses and Scott Weiland.
Yeah.
they transported a once great band, added Scott Weiland to the mix, and all of a sudden they come out sounding like Stone Temple Pilots and blowing hardcore.
Yeah.
So maybe it's him that he takes people who have some talent or some skill and then just somehow makes them worse, miraculously.
He's too goddamn skinny, too. What's that all about? You know, I thought he was off the junk, and now I see him so skinny. It's like, you must be on it. There's no way you can be that skinny in real life.
And I think also what bothers me about Stone Temple Pilots is that the music is so flat and just, it doesn't really go anywhere. It just kind of, you know, stumbles along, and it's just flat sounding and not dynamic. And
let me ask you something. Were you or were you not a fan of Plush?
Oh, I can't even recall. Here, let me see if I can dial it up really fast.
All right, because with Plush, I do remember being a fan, and that was when they had, I don't even remember any of the songs that were on Plush, but I remember Christmas of, I don't know, 94, 95-ish, Austin's Christmas Gifts, and one of them was Plush, and I recall being very excited about having that, but I can't remember the big song that they had back then. I can't remember it now. Shoot.
Yeah, I'm trying to dial up the...
It's not even that important, but... Okay, yeah, it was on Core. I'm sorry, Plush was one of the songs on Core, I believe.
Oh, okay.
They had what was the song?
Here, I can play a selection of Plush.
A Wicked Garden was one of the songs.
Yeah.
Ducks Type Thing was one of the songs. Dead and Bloated. But was it Creep that was the big one?
Here, I'll play Creep then, a little selection.
Okay. That's tough.
Yeah, I remember this one. Yeah, see, this is a far better song.
Yeah.
But this album predated the other one.
Yeah. Yeah, the other one was the next album.
Take time with a wounded.
with a wanted hand.
Yeah, that song is far better.
Yeah.
Okay, how about...
That album in general is better.
So I'll let me play a selection of Plush here.
Okay. Yeah, that's the song.
Yeah, this is really popular.
Although this song makes no sense either.
No, it doesn't. The lyrics are still horrible, but at least the music isn't as muddled by Weiland's suckiness. Yeah, so I think we've identified that Stone Temple Pilots jumped the shark in 94.
Yeah, what is... I'm looking at... They have... Apparently they have a best of album called Thank You, and it has all their best hits, but honestly they're not that great of hits. Pretty much half of them are from that first album we just played, so
yeah.
It's quite obvious that they peaked back when they did that album.
Mm-hmm.
When they did Core. Anyway, next song. I'm ready. Next song.
Last song, actually. Right?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Too bad. All right. But this is definitely a doozy.
Oh, great. I'm ready.
I can safely and confidently state that I do not like and never will like anyone who listens to or enjoys this song. If we were to chart the course of society's cultural progression, this song would dwell in the bowels, somewhere around the genocide of Native Americans and slavery. I'm going to go as far as to demand that everyone who has purchased this album... Which I can... I've got to restart.
Okay. I couldn't handle that. Go ahead, restart.
Okay, I've got to restart this whole spiel. I can safely and confidently state that I do not like and never will like anyone who listens to or enjoys this song. If we were to chart the course of our society's cultural progression, this song would dwell in the bowels, somewhere around the genocide of Native Americans and black slavery. I'm going to go as far as to demand that everyone who has purchased this band's albums or attended their concerts be rounded up by a team of scientists, placed in quarantine, and studied as potential evolutionary missing links between apes and humans. So slam a Budweiser and get ready for some wife beating. It's Drowning Pool Bodies.
I hate this song. Stop it. Stop the song. I demand this. I'm off this ride. I'm done.
No, I gotta mosh.
I'm getting into it. Hold on. Keep it going. Keep it going.
I don't know how many roids a human being would have to take to enjoy this.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Do it.
This song is so...
Just keep it going, I'm loving it.
This song is so, like, masculine. You know, these guys are just...
This song is dedicated to every homophobe, every racist out there.
I know, it just seems... Like, I'm sure that this is what they meant when they wrote the song, but that's just what I identify with. I identify with some Cro-Magnon man who's a super racist at a concert that just goes there to hit 12-year-olds and stuff. Oh yeah, here we go.
Uh-oh. Break it down.
Driven by hate, consumed by fear. That's a That's a bumper sticker on an F-250.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a while since I actually heard that song, but to be honest, like, why do I want to let bodies hit the floor? I don't really want to.
Yeah.
I kind of like...
I mean, it just brings me back to going to Pantera concerts and fearing for my life because there was guys there, there was like skinheads who would just get really drunk and just strut around and try to hit people.
What a mentality that must be, because I've never been in public, I've never been to a concert where I thought to myself that it's time to bust up a dude right now. It's time for me to strike someone in the face. It's time to let bodies hit the floor. You know, that doesn't occur to me. As a rational human being, I don't want to let bodies hit the floor. I kind of like to save them before they hit. I'd like to put them on a gurney before they hit the floor, because the floor is cold, and I don't like that. So this song doesn't appeal to me at all.
Yeah, I guess I can't relate with wanting music to incite me to injure other people. I don't quite see that connection, that music should incite violence.
You know, and you've been to a lot of concerts that are very metal. You've been to Mushroomhead, you've been to... But those are good bands, but, I mean, you've been to Mushroomhead, and you've been to, I don't know, name any one of them. And there's always that moment where you're like, I do fear for my life. I do fear that someone here will murder me if the song appeals to them that much. And that song is a blatant attempt to try to get people of the thousands, the 2000 era, to murder people. That's what it's doing. It's trying to get people to... Like, because when you listen to the older songs of the 90s, when we were into metal, you listen to those, and there are songs that tell you, you know, if you listen to Slayer, they'll say, you know, you should hurt somebody. But, like, that song is a blatant attempt to try to re-inspire that. It's like, dude, those days are over now. You have to be very...
Yeah, thank God they were over, too.
Yeah, yeah, you need to be more ambiguous with your lyrics. Don't just say, let the bodies hit the floor, because that's an empty gesture. Because when bodies hit the floor during the 90s, it was because that's just the result of the song. Whereas now they're just trying to say, let's make it happen, guys. Come on, we need the bodies to hit the floor. That's stupid. I don't like that.
Yeah, it just brings back all those memories of having horrible concert experiences. And I guess some people would see this song as like cathartic, like I'm going to go out there and mosh and this is my release or whatever. Find a release in some other fashion. Because there's people there who just want to listen to music, man.
Yeah, do watercolor paints or something.
Yeah, there's a lot of other routes. I mean, you're 35 years old. You haven't yet reached the emotional maturity level where you can find other releases for anger than to...
But dude, they're 35 years old and they're still wearing their Ride the Lightning tees. So, you know, they're definitely trying to appeal to. They don't care. Like, they have yet to have a regular job. They have yet to evolve as a human being. So for them, like, this is their way back into their 20s.
I guess metal, a lot of metal audience is a lot of really angst-ridden people and a lot of angry. You know, there's a lot of it is based on anger, and no one can dispute that. Mm-hmm. But I guess once you reach a certain age, you kind of learn to dispel that anger or realize different sources of that anger and not... You begin to identify less and less with these morons who write these moronic songs that have nothing to do with really the source of angst and anger. You move on to listening to music like, you know, Bob Marley's No Woman, No Cry or something that has something to say about people who have real sources for anger, you know, not this BS just because you didn't get a college education anger, you know.
There is definitely, though, a line of demarcation where I think about it, and when we were younger and we were listening to Pantera, I think there was definitely a line where you can say that there was some sort of poignance to the lyrics of, let's say, the Great Southern Trendkill. and you can actually say to yourself, you know what, though? They were speaking about something that existed at the time. Whereas, like, when you come into the 2000s, it doesn't exist anymore. And that's kind of why, even as a music listener, I don't listen to that kind of stuff anymore. But they were trying to revive something that was dead. And so when I hear it, it's like, you guys are bringing back stuff that I don't want to deal with anymore. So, you know, it's a very serious thing when they're trying to rejuvenate a genre that I consider dead, and for the most part, everyone else considered dead, but they're trying to bring it up in, like, these younger people, and I don't know if these younger people really took to it, because I don't see, what's that band again? Who did that song that you just played?
Drowning Pool, but they're over because their lead singer's dead.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. But there aren't many bands that are like Drowning Pool today who are able to bring about some sort of resurgence of what we heard back in the 90s. What happened in the 90s with those bands, I have to admit, I was sucker to them. I loved them, but they don't exist in that same context. The context of the 90s that they existed in worked. It doesn't work today. And I think one of the things that maybe metal even has to deal with now, because metal, to me, is dead, it has to deal with the fact that it no longer has a place right now.
So, yeah, I don't know,
that's really deep, but...
I think what happened to metal is it did become irrelevant, like you said, and it got, at least the trend that I've been seeing, is that it got replaced by sort of emo hardcore type acts, yeah. Which... You know, as annoying as they can be, at least it's a step forward in that they're talking about a little bit more complex issues than just hitting people in the face.
Yeah,
you know?
But it's good that we're taking baby steps, because we start in the 90s and it is, let's hit people in the face, and now it's, let's talk things over and then hit them in the face, and hopefully in the 2010s we'll be able to rationalize everything through music. So I think we're in the right, it takes baby steps to get to the full, you know, to get to where we need to be. So, I'm definitely impressed with what you've come up with, though, for your mixtape. Although, I have to say that my mixtape was a little bit more, I don't know, eclectic? I don't know. I like it. I like my mixtape. It's me. I mean, obviously there's a bias involved, so I guess we'll have to let the listeners decide whose mixtape was better.
Yeah, we'll see, okay. I guess.
Yeah, but I know that there's been a few people already who've emailed me their mixtapes, and they've definitely got some good ideas. So I think maybe next week what we can do is we can people have come up with and kind of make up a mixtape based on theirs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can maybe dedicate half the show to going over submitted mixtapes and then coming up with maybe an ultimate mixtape. So if you have ideas or you have your own 5-song piss poor mixtape, send it into thisjustin@the-means.com.
And I think ultimately, though, what it'll come down to is, well, let me pose this question to you. Which genre of music has the worst combination, let's say, lyrics and music? What is the... Because neither of us featured country music, and I know we both agree that country music is about the worst it can get, yet neither of us really featured it. So what is going to be the ultimate song to put on that mixtape?
I do think country is the worst genre of music. However, just because I hate every single song that's ever come out at country-wise, I just couldn't pick one. I mean, they're all... I can't put an entire genre on the worst song ever, so I just chose not to include country.
Yeah.
But, I mean, to me, I think the 90s are the worst, personally.
The 90s is the worst era of music?
Yeah, 90s rock.
I think, for me, when I think of music that's shitty, I think of the 70s. I do think that the 70s didn't have much to say, because you go through the 60s, and it's like, this is where the early rock met the good rock. Like you have these bands who are making like Motown, which is rock solid. Motown, hands down for me, is like one of the best genres of music of all time. And then you've also got rock coming out. You've got the Beatles and you've got Simon and Garfunkel. And then you get to the 70s and it's like, wait, what the hell is happening to music all of a sudden? It stopped being good. And then you get to the 80s and there's definitely guilty pleasures, but there are good parts of music. And then, of course, you get to the 90s, there's the sift through. But for me, I think the 70s is really a transitional period, and it was a bad one.
Yeah, I guess maybe I'm just not knowledgeable enough on 70s music to really pick out what really represented the low point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's coming to mind is like Afternoon Delight. It's a horrible, horrible song.
You're talking to a guy who likes Afternoon Delight.
God.
I like it for all the wrong reasons. That's the point.
Yeah, so maybe we should put a challenge out to the listeners that when you submit your piss-poor mixtapes, try to throw some 70s in there so we can make up the ultimate.
Because, when I think everything that we've put in there has definitely been either 90s or even recent, more recent stuff, so... Maybe that's testament, though, to the fact that there has been nothing of merit coming out recently. I try to think of A, and they're few and far between, really.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's up to the listening audience, though. As soon as they send all your crap into this, just in at themeans.com, and we'll sift through what you have to say. But as it stands right now, it seems like the 90s and the 70s are low points in human history as far as music goes.
Yep, and that's all we have for this week, so tune in next Monday.
Yeah, send all your crap into us, and I guess that's all I have to say.
You have been listening to This Just In, recorded on Sunday, November 27th, 2005, and released on Monday, November 28th, 2005. Please remember to send in your selections from Piss Poor Mixtapes to thisjustin@the-means.com for inclusion in next week's program. For more information about this podcast and other projects, please visit www.the-means.com.
There's got to be someone else.